Blog Talk Radio.
Ain't got a dime to my name, what a terrible shame. Ho hum, ho ho hum. Just found a hole in my shoe when my stocking shows through. Ho hum, ho ho hum. I know that when you're as free as a bird in a tree, life is a wonderful whim. Look at the crank with his dough in the bank. Don't you feel sorry for him? Rolling along at a loss, never gathering moss. Ho, hum, ho, 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 hum. Terrific success, I ought to worry, I guess. Ho, 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 ho. I like a shady old tree. What's the matter with me? Ho, 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 ho. There's nothing quite as grotesque as a man at a desk looking outside at the sun. Shirts made of silk and a diet of milk. Maybe he thinks he has fun. I've got the vagabond itch. I guess I'll never get rich. Ho, hum. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho.
Sometimes you just got to play some Crosby. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Yeah, that's right. That's what we're doing. It's Tuesday, and that's where we're at. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded incarnation of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be. Because it is the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio. Mojo50.com. Well. a little something from Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary for, well, dude, what's his name? Joe Biden. Again, this has to just bear with me. I've said many times in the past, and I came up with this. I was thinking about it one time in a conversation I had with a terrific interview I did with a man named Jamie Glassoff, who's host of the Glassoff Gang, a really smart guy. He's one of those front page mag guys like David Horowitz and Mike Cutler. And, you know, we were talking about some things, and it occurred to me that all the scandals that break, and you know what I'm talking about, every time something comes up where there's suspected wrongdoing or chicanery or skullduggery by the government, there are people out there, really, really smart people, Glassoff, of course, being one of them, Cutler, Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, Don Nguyen, Don Fizz, Gary Binford, okay? I mean, smart people. By the way, I want to talk about Gary for a minute. He just posted his interview with Diamond and Silk. Yeah, he did. It was pre-recorded, but this is the premiere. It's coming out. It's already been posted on Facebook and all the platforms. United Patriots Uprising, Gary Binford. Go check that out, but not now. Okay? Don't do it now. You're here with me, and we got some stuff to go through. What were we talking about? Oh, and these scandals that come up, and these really smart people that are out there that I listen to and lean on and look to try and explain what's going on out there, and I then disseminate that information out to you guys. It's always the same thing. Water, scientists will tell you, is the universal solvent. What does that mean? Well, that means that anything left in water long enough is going to break down, no matter what it is. Time, it would seem, in a pattern that goes for the last 35, 40 years, time is the universal solvent when it comes to things like what we're getting ready to hear. In this instance, it's a remarkably short amount of time, barely a couple weeks. In other instances, it takes longer. Sometimes it takes 4 years. It took about 4 years for that trumped-up necktie party called the Mueller investigation to finally admit, after hiring 3 million people and spending a bazillion dollars, that there was there wasn't any evidence. It was all bullshit. And they knew it was bullshit from the start because they're the ones that generated it. But in time, as we knew these things and suspected these things of being, you know, smoke, of being manufactured in the very beginning, the universal solvent of time bears out the fact that we were right. Karine Jean-Pierre.
Was it the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it.
Watching the news, was he scrolling Twitter? Did someone in his staff flag it for him?
I can tell you this. He was not aware of the was it the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it before it happened. So I can tell you that did not know it. He learned about it really like all of us did. I'm sure maybe someone on his team flagged it for him, but he was not aware. What I can tell you definitively and for sure.
Okay, I'm confused.
He was not aware of this. Nobody in the White House was. We were not given a heads up, and we did not know about what happened yesterday.
Afterwards, between the Justice Department and President Biden.
One question for Africa, Karine.
I'm going to come back, guys.
Thank you. Africans deserve questions as well, Karine. Come on.
The United States must maintain total and complete deniability.
Was it the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it.
Yeah, the Mar-a-Lago raid. And to let you know a little bit more about the Mar-a-Lago raid, regardless of what Karine, you know what this reminds me of? I'll tell you where they got this play from. I can tell you exactly where they got this play from. A million years ago, when Lois Lerner and the IRS had decided to slow walk all the Tea Party 501c3s. Well, there was a concerted effort there. There was intent. That was a weaponization of the IRS. Not exactly like militarizing it with 87,000 agents armed to the frickin' teeth. But weaponized, nonetheless. When the word came out, when eventually it became public knowledge that the IRS was indeed slow walking these 501c3 applications, they asked President Obama about it. And during that press conference, he said, "I heard about it, like the rest of you, on the news." I think it was Friday evening. Yes, it was Friday evening. I remember because I was having Friday's roast beef and arugula sandwiches, so. We watched it there. It was the first we heard about it. Well, that's, you know, he knew about it all the time because it was probably his damn idea. But he gave the green light on it. It's a lie. Just the same thing as Karine Jean-Pierre says. President Joe Biden's White House intimately involved with the Department of Justice's criminal probe into former President Donald Trump. And this is according to government documents that were reviewed by a group called Just the News. Several correspondences between Trump's attorneys and members of the Biden administration revealed that the federal government appeared poised to waive Trump's claims of executive privileges over documents that Trump kept at Mar-a-Lago until earlier this year. The memos show that then White House Deputy Counsel Jonathan Suh was engaged in conversations with the FBI, the DOJ, and the National Archives as early as April, shortly after 15 boxes of classified and other materials were, are you ready, voluntarily returned to the Federal Historical Agency from Trump's Florida home. By May, Jonathan Suh conveyed to the archives that President Joe Biden would not object to waiving his predecessor's claims to executive privilege, a decision that opened the door for the Department of Justice to get a grand jury to issue a subpoena compelling Trump to turn over any remaining materials he possessed from his presidency. In other words, what were they looking for? Anything that had his signature on it or related to his presidency. So in other words, every piece of paper ever produced by the Trump administration, period, end of story. A May 10 letter from acting National Archivist Deborah Stidell-Wall to Trump's legal team confirmed the White House's involvement in the DOJ probe against Trump. April 11, 2022, the White House Counsel's Office, affirming a request from the Department of Justice supported by an FBI letterhead memorandum, formally transmitted a request that the NARA provide the FBI access to the 15 boxes for its review within 7 days, with the possibility that the FBI might request copies of specific documents following its review of the boxes, the letter continued. The counsel to the president has informed me that in light of the particular circumstances presented here, President Biden defers to my determination in consultation with the Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel regarding whether or not I should uphold the former president's purported protective assertion of executive privilege. I have decided, therefore, not to honor the former president's protective claim of privilege. The counsel to the president of the United States, Joe Biden, has informed me, in light of the particular circumstances presented here, President Biden defers to my determination in consultation with the Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel regarding whether or not I should uphold the, so they knew it. They were in on it all the time. Now, these documents that were reviewed by Just the News are the strongest pieces of evidence to date showing the Biden White House's involvement in the DOJ probe, although the White House, through spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre. I know, man, I just like saying it. Okay, Karine Jean-Pierre. You know, they previously claimed to have no advanced knowledge. Really? Now, that being said, Just the News does not report that the White House had specific knowledge of the search warrant or the raid, but that they're participating in this through the waiving of executive privilege was critical to the investigation. In affirming that decision to not honor Trump's claims of executive privilege, Wall relied on a Supreme Court precedent that strongly suggests that a former president may not successfully assert executive privilege against the very executive branch in whose name the privilege is invoked. However, this case was ruled before Congress's current Presidential Records Act was enacted, Just the News explains to us. Wall's letter to Trump's attorneys also claimed the former president had items marked as classified national security information in this set of 15 boxes that Trump's team returned to the National Archives in February. After the National Archives reviewed these documents, they told the Department of Justice about the potentially classified material, which prompted Justice to ask Biden to request the National Archives to turn over access to the documents to the FBI. They knew, okay? They were in on it. In a letter to the National Archives, General Counsel Gary Stern who's Evan Corcoran is Trump's lawyer. He wrote this letter. I'm sorry, got a little ahead of myself. Trump lawyer Evan Corcoran wrote a letter to the National Archives General Counsel, and he says, "We have requested the ability to review the documents. That review is necessary in order to ascertain whether any specific document is subject to privilege. We would respectfully request that you restrict the access to the documents until we have had the opportunity to review them and to consult with President Donald J. Trump so that he may personally make any decision to assert a claim of constitutionally based privilege." Wall confirmed the Biden administration would not honor the former president's protective claim of privilege after Attorney Corcoran sent his letter to Stern. Weeks after Wall's letter to Corcoran, the Department of Justice sent Trump's attorney a grand jury subpoena requesting the return of any national security documents left at Mar-a-Lago roughly 2 months before the FBI raid on Trump's home. Legal scholar Alan Dershowitz criticized the Biden administration's waiver of Trump's executive privilege claim. "I was very surprised," he said. "The current president should not be able to waive the executive privilege of a predecessor without the consent of the former president. What president will ever discuss anything in private if he knows the man who beat him can and will disclose it? The best thinking is that an incumbent president cannot waive the right of a previous president and make a mockery of the whole notion of privilege." Trump has routinely criticized the FBI for conducting the illegal raid on Mar-a-Lago. In addition, the former president has explained that he would have complied with any further document requests from law enforcement had they asked. "My attorneys and representatives are cooperating fully, and very good relationships have been established. The government could have had whatever they wanted if we had it." Karim.
Was it the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it.
Watching the news, was he scrolling Twitter? Did someone in his staff flag it for him?
I can tell you this. He was not aware of... Was it the Mar-a-Lago raid? I don't know what you guys are calling it. Before it happened. So I can tell you that did not know it. He learned about it really like all of us did. I'm sure maybe someone on his team flagged it for him, but he was not aware. What I can tell you definitively and for sure.
Okay, I'm confused.
He was not aware of this. Nobody in the White House was. We were not given a heads up, and we did not know.
Oh my God, Karim. Come with me to the Casbah, baby. John Klain knew. Man, does he look like a Dynasty television series villain or what, Ron Klain? And Susan Rice knew. They knew. They ran out. It was probably their idea. They want every single piece of paper that was produced of any kind of documentation of any kind from the Trump administration. And we know why. Because it incriminates him. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Biden. I'm talking about his people. I'm talking about the Gang of Eight, okay? I'm talking about Adam Schiff. I'm talking about Mark Rubio. I'm talking about Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Mitch Turkey Neck McConnell. Yeah, I live in West Virginia. Kentucky's our next door neighbor, and Kentuckians are great people, man. Kentucky's a beautiful state, terrific people. Doesn't it bother y'all what you've done with McConnell? And we had the same deal, okay? We had the same deal. We had Robert Byrd, okay? Robert Byrd was a high up in the Klan back in the day. It was claimed that he renounced those ideations. I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He was one of Joe Biden's big pals. That tells you anything. They knew. They were in on it. They knew. Okay? They knew. And speaking of the FBI, the Fatal Bureau of Investigation, they mark a milestone this month. We also have the Afghan anniversary. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. As Senator Ted Cruz recently noted, the FBI is portraying patriotic Americans as violent extremists, a description that could be fairly applied to the FBI itself, particularly the Bureau's leadership. And if that should be doubted, let's take a look at a case that marks 30 years this month. Army veteran Randy Weaver believed that the world had become corrupt and dangerous, so he chose to be a survivalist. All you Gen Xers and Y heads out there, you guys call them preppers. In the day, they were survivalists. So in 1983, Randy Weaver built a cabin in the remote Ruby Ridge area of northern Idaho, and he lived there with his wife, Vicky, his daughters, Sarah and Elizabeth, his son, Samuel, and family friend, Kevin Harris. Weaver held anti-government views, but was not a member of the Aryan Nations. The Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms sought to make Weaver an informant among that group, and when he refused, he was arrested. This led to a standoff in which U.S. Marshal William Dagan and Weaver's son Samuel, aged 14, were both killed. This brought in the FBI, which deployed some 400 heavily armed agents, helicopters, and armored personnel carriers against a single family. The rules of engagement allowed deadly force against any family member seen with a firearm, but in effect, it was shoot on sight. Randy Weaver passed away at age 74 this last May 11th, but his 1995 Senate testimony stands the test of time. On August 21st, 1992, federal marshals, Randy Weaver testified, shot my son Samuel in the back and killed him. He was running home to me. His last words were, "I'm coming, Dad." They shot his little arm almost off, and they killed him by shooting him in the back with a 9mm submachine gun. Gun had a silencer on it. He was not wanted for any crime. He did not commit any crime. The marshals killed his dog right at his feet. He only tried to defend himself and his dog. Sammy was just 14 years old. He didn't yet weigh 80 pounds. He wasn't yet 5 feet tall. The marshals who killed Sammy were grown men. They were in combat gear. They had their faces painted with camouflage. They were wearing full camouflage suits with black ninja-type hoods. They were carrying machine guns and large-caliber semi-automatic pistols. They were trained to kill. Two of them were hiding behind trees and rocks in the woods where they could not be seen. The third was around a bend in the trail in thick forest. They were under direct orders from Washington to do nothing to injure the children. They were to have no contact or confrontation with me or my family. They killed him anyway, in violation of their orders. One day later, Vicky Weaver was holding infant daughter Elizabeth in the cabin doorway when FBI sniper Lon Horiuchi shot the unarmed mother in the face, killing her instantly. Snipers are trained carefully, by the way, to acquire their targets, so there's little chance that this shooting was accidental. On August 22nd, 1992, Randy Weaver testified completely without any warning of any kind. An FBI sniper shot and killed my wife, Vicky. He was using a .308 caliber sniper rifle with a specially weighted barrel and a 10-power scope. He was using match-grade ammunition. He had years of training to kill. I heard him testify at the trial. He wanted to kill. He shot my wife in the head and killed her. She wasn't wanted for any crime. There were no warrants for her arrest. At the time she was gunned down, she was helpless. She was standing in the doorway of her home. She was holding the door open for me and Sarah and for Kevin Harris. She was holding Elizabeth. I'm sorry, I keep messing that up. Elisheba, our 10-month-old baby girl, in her arms. As the bullet crashed through her head, she slumped to her knees, holding Elisheba so she wouldn't drop her. We took the baby from her. She lay dead and bleeding on our kitchen floor. Yeah, it's dead air for a reason. I want you guys to think about what you just heard me tell you. Louis Free, the Clinton pick for FBI boss, expressed regret and sorrow for Miss Weaver's death, which was tragic but accidental. For Free, a former federal judge, the sniper's second shot was constitutional. Free also referred to the murder of Marshall Deegan, which was inaccurate, given the 1993 trial that acquitted Weaver and Harris on that charge. Free testified that serious mistakes occurred within regard to the Ruby Ridge incident, some of them by Larry Potts, the agent in charge. After Potts was censured, Director Free promoted him to deputy director of the FBI, a position for which Free said he was superbly qualified. Clinton Attorney General Janet Reno approved the appointment. At the time of the siege, Attorney General William Barr spent 2 weeks organizing former attorney generals to defend FBI sniper Lon Horridge, the same William Barr that everybody put so much hope into busting up this conspiracy that the Democrats had going against President Trump and his administration, against the American people. Lon Horridge's kill shot on Vicki Weaver was constitutional, but also an accident, and one of the many mistakes that could have been avoided but weren't. FBI snipers also wounded Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris, who was near death when he finally surrendered. In the aftermath, Randy Weaver filed a lawsuit that paid more than $3 million to the family. A federal jury also acquitted Weaver on the firearms charge that launched the events. Democrat Senators Herb Kohl and Patrick Leahy sympathized with the Weaver family, but as the San Francisco Examiner reported, California Senator Dianne Feinstein dealt sternly with Weaver, asking whether his children wore Nazi armbands and slouted Nazi slogans at neighbors. And that marked an escalation from early media descriptions of the Weavers as white separatists. Since the 30th anniversary, since the 2020 election, those less than worshipful of Joe Biden are branded white supremacists. The FBI smears patriotic Americans as violent extremists and parents who protest the racist indoctrination of their children become domestic terrorists. The FBI boss Christopher Wray, who strenuously denied any FBI spying on Trump, is down with all of it, and so is Attorney General Merrick Garland. As the 30th anniversary of Ruby Ridge approaches, the FBI functions as a Geheimstaatspolizei, an American Gestapo, making summary arrests in the dead of night with a show of overwhelming force. The FBI is also the American Komitet Gosudovnyevoi Bezopashnosti, KGB. I think I'll stick with German. The KGB involved in such stagecraft as the Whitmer kidnapping plot. The FBI lost in court, but Agent Stephen D'Antuono, who was in charge of the entrapment operation, and just think, for those of you who came in late, the FBI manufactured a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and it turned out that I think 9 of the 12 conspirators were FBI agents. He was the man, Stephen D'Antuono, was the guy in charge of the entrapment operation, promoted to assistant director of the Washington, D.C. field office some 2 months after the Ruby Ridge milestone come the midterms. Should the same massive irregularities of 2020 accompany those elections, embattled Americans might launch major pushback. Might. 2024 is just down the road. If the next presidential election is going to be curated by the usual suspects, Soros, Zuckerberg, the Democrat National Committee, Roger Kimball explains. A few million people might begin acting like Black Lives Matter during the summer of 2020, and Kimball wonders, what then? If Ruby Ridge is an indication, the FBI would marshal massive military force, including snipers like Lon Horiuchi. He was also there at Waco in 1993, where 76 people perished, including 23 children. Desire to wage war on ordinary Americans, to disadvantage them, even to kill them, had long been bubbling in the ruling class's basements. This was written by the late Angelo Codevilla, citing documents such as hotspots of terrorism and other crimes in the United States from 1979-2008. This Department of Homeland Security study classified persons judged suspicious of centralized federal authority and reverent of individual liberty as extreme right-wing terrorists. That's you. That's me. For Codevilla, the countless nearly identical pronouncements from on high in recent days can be taken as an announcement that the ruling class has raised them into forceful mainstream. Moving forward in America, the struggle against FBI violence is the struggle of memory. The struggle of memory against forgetfulness. The public has a very, very short memory. And I suppose that makes those people in Washington and guys like Lon Horiuchi or Larry Potts tickled half to death, because if we had a longer memory, these guys might have some serious, serious problems. These people are evil. These people are corrupt. These people hate America. These people hate you and I. They hate the Constitution. They hate the Declaration. They hate the flag. They hate the eagle. They hate everything that this country stands for and represents. All those ideals. We'll be back with more of ACP after this.
If you could see me now, the one who said I'd rather roam, the one who said he'd rather be alone. If you could only see me now, if I could hold you now, just for a moment, if I could really make you mine. Just for a while, turn back the hands of time. If I could only hold you now. I've been too long in the wind, too long in the rain, taking any comfort that I can. Looking back and longing for the freedom of my chains, and lying in your loving arms again. If you could hear me now, singing somewhere in the lonely night, dreaming of the arms that held me tight. You could only hear me now. Oh, I've been too long in the wind, taking any comfort that I can. Looking back and longing for the freedom of my chains, and lying in your loving arms again. I can almost feel your loving arms again. Get to sleep, I think about the implications of diving in too deep, and possibly the complications, especially at night. I worry over situations I know will be alright. Perhaps it's just imagination. Day after day it reappears. Night after night my heartbeat shows the fear. Ghosts appear and fade away. Along between the sheets only brings the desperation. It's time to walk the streets, smell the desperation. At least there's pretty lights, though there's little variation. It nullifies the night from overkill. Day after day it reappears. Tonight my heartbeat shows the fear. Ghosts appear and fade away. Come back another day.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Exactly. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm going to do between now and November. I'm going to get you guys mad, and you need to be mad. You know why? Because you are human beings. Your lives do have value. They do have meaning. Welcome back to A Conservative's Perspective. I'm James Bostic. It's good to be here with you. Thank you for the opportunity to spend a little time with you and get to talk about the interesting times that we live in. You know, while Joe Biden's panicked evacuation from Afghanistan was going on, it had failed so badly that staffers from his own wife's office were contacting private rescue groups to try to get people out. This is one of the many damning revelations in the report by Representative McCaul for the Republican minority on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The interim report called A Strategic Failure was conducted despite every possible effort by the White House and the House Democrats to stop it, including blocking information requests and keeping briefings unnecessarily classified. With the revelations that the State Department is actively refusing to cooperate with the Special Inspector General on the Afghanistan reconstruction, this report is now more urgent than ever. Forced to rely on personal interviews and public non-classified testimony, the report reveals that Biden had made it a priority to maintain an embassy in Kabul even after he had withdrawn the troops and the country was on the verge of falling to Taliban forces. POTUS was publicly making it clear that this was a priority. Ambassador Wilson began stating that I am maniacal about the embassy remaining in Kabul, a military officer described. Secretary of State Blinken and other State Department officials in D.C. and Kabul refused to consider the possibility of a Taliban takeover. Only Blinken and his department could order an evacuation, and they refused to seriously plan for one until about a week before the fall of Kabul. Military officials were prevented from even discussing an evacuation, being told, don't say NEO. This is not NEO for Afghanistan, and NEO stands for non-combatant evacuation. Biden's refusal to listen to advisors who told him to maintain a minimal military force on the ground almost led to an even worse disaster as the only remaining airport was overrun. With American forces under fire, Air Force pilots and maintenance personnel were handed guns and told to stand guard. Had the Taliban wanted to overrun the airport, they could have done so. The report notes that most of the officers working at the Joint Operations Center were also pressed into security duties as the mob got within 150 meters of that key command center. And the abandoned and isolated military personnel on the ground were under Taliban fire. (Clears throat) Military helicopters evacuating the embassy had to evade constant enemy fire. Yeah, you remember like those helicopters that they said, you know, those helicopters in Saigon that they said we would never see at Kabul? Those helicopters. The airport guard towers received small arms fire throughout the day, and Taliban mortars forced the closure of the airport. The suicide bombing that killed 13 service members was the inevitable result of Biden's bad decisions, which turned the American presence in Kabul into Fort Apache. With no plan, deprived of proper military support, isolated on a small strip of land, surrounded by armed enemies and dangerous mobs, Biden led American military personnel into a trap. Joe Biden lied. Guess what? You know the rest of it. Say it. Biden lied. Yeah. Americans died. While the State Department's focus on Biden's priority of maintaining an embassy led directly to the wretched scenes of American citizens being beaten by the Taliban and left behind under fire, Biden's military brass also has plenty to answer for. The Taliban had offered, why don't you just take security for all of Kabul? General McKenzie replied, that was not my instruction. The Taliban had urged, we want you to have it. That would have required thousands more troops that Biden refused to authorize. General McKenzie had initially planned to tell the Taliban to stop outside the city, but in the meeting instead told the Islamic terrorism group that he had no opinion on them taking the city. Not dead air. Instead of trying to secure the city for an evacuation, the Biden administration and its generals outsourced the job to the Taliban with horrifying results for our citizens and our prestige. Adding to this disgrace, British, French, and other NATO members went out into Kabul to rescue their own people, while our generals refused to do likewise and tried to discourage them. U.S. commanders were really pissed off by Allied troops leaving the perimeter to rescue their respective citizens, expressing concerns that these movements could draw a negative reaction from the Taliban, because we wouldn't want them to think ill of us, would we? Biden's generals are more concerned about the Taliban's reaction than about getting all the Americans trapped behind enemy lines out of the country. And so, with that, over 800 to 1,000 American citizens have been abandoned by Biden behind Taliban enemy lines. They're still there. American women would have been among those who were beaten and shot at for not being accompanied by a male. They were sexually assaulted. They were trampled and forced to stand in wastewater for hours. Wastewater? They're not talking about stuff from a car wash. They're talking about pee and poo. They forced him to do it. If there's American citizens left, we're going to stay and get them all out, Biden had promised, one of his many lies. The McCall report carefully documents the complete contradiction between the Biden administration's claims about the evacuation and the realities on the ground. The most damning evidence of this are the efforts by Jill Biden and Kamala Harris's people to contact private rescue groups to get people out instead of operating through their own administration. Biden claimed his withdrawal was carried out with the support and consent of military leaders and allies, and that no one had foreseen a rapid Taliban takeover. In reality, he had been warned repeatedly that the return of the Taliban was a question of when and not if, and that the resurgence of Al-Qaeda was the most likely scenario as a result of this. Joe Biden knew this. He was aware of it, and he lied anyway. NATO allies vehemently opposed the unconditional withdrawal to such a degree that Secretary Blinken phoned his boss from the NATO summit to tell him he had gotten a jolt in quadraphonic sound opposing this move. His own military advisors told him not to do it. Nothing Biden and his people said about their botched evacuation of Afghanistan was even remotely true. Nothing. After withdrawing forces while leaving thousands of Americans behind on the ground, Biden reluctantly approved a limited evacuation whose military personnel were cut off from the start. Mobs overran the airport, mostly young men, filling up the planes which took off. The State Department failed to plan for the evacuation or even to vet the evacuees, leading to dozens of Afghans with terrorist ties coming to America and massive backups of Afghan evacuees abroad. After its Saigon moment, the Biden administration has been paying approximately $300,000 per flight to a Taliban-controlled airline in order to allow U.S. citizens and Afghan allies to continue evacuating. Air Taliban is being funded by the United States with cash, with State Department officials telling us, yeah, the Taliban, which has been cash-strapped up to this point, are profiting from these payments. The Taliban had every incentive to sabotage our evacuation to profit from Air Taliban. Sizable quantities of weapons and equipment falling into the hands of the Taliban. Some family members of Americans, including military personnel, are still trapped in Afghanistan. Despite the withdrawal, massive amounts of our money continues flowing to the Taliban in the form of hostage payments and foreign aid. Al-Qaeda freely operates in Afghanistan, and the United States of America suffered an unprecedented disgrace, abandoning citizens and allies alike. A year later, the interim report from the Republican minority on the House Foreign Affairs Committee is only the beginning of the effort to expose the truth about Biden's betrayal. But it is an important step in the fight against the lies and the spin from the man who did it all. You pissed off? You getting mad? You should be. You should be mad as hell. 800 to 1,000 Americans are left in Afghanistan. They've been there for a year. Can you imagine what has been going on? Can you imagine how they've been treated? Can you imagine what they've had to suffer through? Think about it. Women, children. You know what they do to kids over there, man. They don't care. If they can't find a woman, they'll take a young boy. It doesn't matter to them. Bacha Bachi. That's what it's called. Then they'll rape them. Joe Biden's been on vacation for 3 damn weeks, man. Eating ice cream, riding bicycles. Then going home and going through his collection of Beanie and Cecil episodes. And that's not a knock on Beanie and Cecil, by the way. That was a great show. It's just this simplistic moron that we have in the White House. And not to mention the Afghan allies that we created in this area. Trained military guys that were going after Al-Qaeda, that were going after the Taliban. Trying to purge this cancer, this scourge from their country. I don't think that I can exaggerate the evil that these people are capable of. Fecklessness, yeah, we can talk about it all day. Incompetence, definitely. But when you combine that with evil, with a malicious intent to cause harm, to Americans. We got a problem, guys. We got a problem. And I got to be honest with you, man. Some days I am just not optimistic about the fact that, you know, there's not going to be bloodshed. I mean, there's already been bloodshed. They've killed dozens of people, almost 1,000 policemen since George Floyd. Floyd George. Yeah, whoever, dude, okay? The habitual offender that should not have died, but at the same time, in no stretch of the imagination, should have been celebrated or made a martyr of. He was a piece of crap. He didn't deserve to die, but he was still a piece of crap. He deserved to be put in jail. He deserved to be removed from society. But he did not deserve to die just because he was a piece of crap. But he was. He's not a hero. He's not a good man. He's nothing. And almost 900 and some police officers during that time frame got killed all over the country. Days of rage. Almost 1,000 cops quacked in mostly peaceful protests in the Love Inns. All governments, I've come to the conclusion, all governments, whether they're a democracy, representative type republic like we have here in the United States, or whether it's a monarchy, whether it's an oligarchy, whether it's an autocracy, whether it's communism or some other form of totalitarian authoritarianism or tyranny, whatever. There are always men within those governments, good and bad, that make that government as it exists worse. Why? Because they're corrupt. They're embedded, they're dug in, they're protected. And these people are actively and openly conspiring against you and I. They're conspiring against you and I in the hope that they can cause us harm, that they can make us submit, to knuckle under and crawl. That's what they want. They don't care about your kids. They don't care about your friends and neighbors. They don't care about your moms and dads. They don't care about your families. They don't care about your communities, even though they make a lot of noise like they do and that everything they're trying to do is for the improvement of communities. It's a lie. They hate you. They don't just dislike you. It's not our friends on the other side of the aisle. They hate you. They hate me. They don't want us talking this way. They don't want us talking about these things. They don't want us questioning their authority. They don't want us pushing back. Are you getting mad? Are you ready? Are you ready to jump up out of your chair and go over to the window and open it and stick your head out and yell, "You're mad as hell, you're not going to take it anymore"? Seriously. They say terrible things about this country, about you and I. They say that racism is endemic. They say it is systemic. They say it is pervasive throughout the United States. Racism. Well, it would seem to me at some point then, if we're such a racist, evil nation, why in the hell are these people lined up like the Stones were in town trying to cross the border illegally? Why are they organizing caravans to come to the United States? It would seem at some point some of the guys that made the trip will go, hey, no, wait, my main man, you don't want to come up here. They hate us up here. They hate brown people. They hate Latinos. You don't, no, don't come. But they don't do that. So this gives lie to this ridiculous, you know, postulation that we're a racist country. We're not. Are there racist people in this country? Yeah. Are there racist beliefs that are held by white people, by black people, by Latinos? Hell yes. They're in the minority. They're amplified by these people in the media and in politics that want to foment this division based on racism because it allows them the ability to what? To conquer. To conquer. They're not of this country, all right? These people are not like you and me. They look like us. But you know what? It reminds me of a TV show and a classic movie where the analogies were made about communism with the invasion of the body snatchers. But when I was a kid in the 60s, late 60s, mid-late 60s, there was a TV show called The Invaders. And The Invaders was the story of a fellow named David Vinson. He was an architect, and late one night, he took a shortcut that wasn't really the one he needed. He was worn out. He was beat. So he pulls in to this closed-up, out-of-business restaurant. He figures he'll just get a couple hours shut-eye before he starts on his way back home. But his sleep is interrupted. And as he is awakened, he sees a UFO, a flying saucer. And it lands. Well, he beats feet and gets out of there, tries to tell people what he has seen. No one believes him. They don't want to believe him. But the aliens that come from this craft look exactly like you and I. Exactly. They talk like us. They walk like us. They look like us. They have emotions. They think, they feel, they breathe. They move around. However, there's a problem. The little fingers on the right and left hands of the alien imposters was misshapen. And that's how you could tell who the invaders were. And, you know, the series revolves around Vincent going around the country, finding these people, trying to create alliances with people who believe him, to combat the invaders. This is no different. Absolutely no different. You hung up too soon, pal. You're missing the best part. You don't think we're under invasion? We are. We're under an invasion at our southern border. We're under an invasion through the progressive Marxists that occupy the left wing of American politics. Everywhere we turn around, they're establishing beachheads, making more and more of the things that we decree as unacceptable normative. They want it to be okay to abort children even after they're born, murdering them beforehand and after. They want it okay for sexual predators, male sexual predators, to be able to go into women's bathrooms. During the pandemic, they arrested people for going to church. Before it became the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, it was known as the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS. And it got its start in World War II. And it learned from our allies' intelligence services that were already actively operating during the Second World War, the British, the French. And the men that later came to run the CIA throughout the 50s, men like William Colby, men like Dean Acheson, they were a product of the OSS. And these intelligence agencies now, with law enforcement agencies basically Maine Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation and its various arms, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Commission, and soon to be the IRS, are targeting America and Americans, real Americans, true Americans. These people aren't real Americans. They're totally un-American. Yeah, they were probably born in the United States, educated in the United States, grew up hating the United States, or at some point embraced that hateful ideology that we see in left-wing politics. I used to think that this was going to be solved at the ballot box. I really did. And I still think and hope and believe that it can. But I got to be honest with you guys, and I know you probably feel the same way, or maybe not. I watch the news. I see Joe Biden. I see Chuck Schumer. I see Nancy Pelosi. I see Christopher Wray. I see people like Peter Strzok, like James Comey, like John Brennan. By the way, did you know in 1976, John Brennan voted for Slobberin' Gus Hall, the Communist Party USA's presidential candidate? Did you know that? He did. And so did James damn Comey. How the hell do communist sympathizers wind up as director of CIA or the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the fatal Bureau of Investigation? How the hell does that happen? And that's a rhetorical question. We all know the answer. With their fellow travelers who are embedded in the government. Fixers. Plumbers is what they used to be called. Dirty tricks men. The guys that run the smears and the shadow campaigns. We're their enemies. Every single one of us. Every man jack of us. You, me, Gary Benford, Don Newman, Donna Fiducia, Rocky Stucci, Ron Phillips, Mark Hoffman, Gary Benford, Kevin White, Pete Serafin, Aaron Barker, anybody that's doing what we do, there's a target on you, man. They're watching. And when you get big enough, your voice gets loud enough, they're going to smack you down just like they do anybody. And I'm convinced, there's no doubt. Excuse me. Oh, man, tell you what. We're going to go ahead and take a brief musical interlude. We're here at the top of the hour. We a few minutes left to go back. We will be back with more, gosh, of a conservative perspective right after this.
Trigger, set a terrible sound. He pulls the city high, says, "Turn wide."
Welcome back. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. Do it twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Also have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. You know, if you aren't listening, you ought to be, because this is the very best in conservative and libertarian talk radio. We'll talk about Ron DeSantis for a minute. A lot of people hold out a lot of hope for Ron DeSantis. And there may be. I think what's happened is Ron DeSantis is being managed by new people. He's being managed by the club. And they're looking at Ron DeSantis to be an acceptable substitute for Donald Trump, because they don't want, the club does not want Donald Trump running. One tweet. The FBI raids Mar-a-Lago in a stunning violation of the Fourth Amendment. One tweet from his personal Twitter account, and for the next 5 days after the raid, no one hears a peep from Ron DeSantis. And after that 5 days, he emerges with a new press secretary and a national brand image launch. And he's got a national ad out going now. I don't know what it means. Does it mean that he's going to be corrupt? Does it mean he's going to be taken in by the club? I don't know. It's entirely possible. And, you know, they, and here's the thing. These, November's coming, bum, bum, bum. And they do all the, you know, okay. Well, this means that the powers that be are just looking at a whole new crop of people that they're going to have to buy off. That's all it means. That's the only thing that's changing. Okay, the recipients of the bribes are going to be changed. Warren Hatch once said it is impossible, impossible to go to Washington, D.C. and return an honest man. Harry Truman said it is impossible, impossible for an honest man to get rich in politics. Maybe that's why so many of them stay in Washington, so they don't want to go home a dishonest man. But that's what they are, a large number of them. Fauci's bailing. Have you seen that? Fauci's bailing out. He's decided he's done. And he's going to be retiring shortly after the midterms. This guy's responsible for the deaths of perhaps millions all over the world. For businesses, small businesses that were destroyed during that pandemic. And those small businesses are run by families. Families that have been impoverished and are now destitute, probably homeless. Probably had their businesses collapse. Probably had their homes foreclosed on. Crushed. Because of this corrupt, dirty, Mengele-like doctor. When he retires, he's going to have a pension that comes in at about $380,000. He will make more in his retirement pension than the President of the United States makes on the job. For killing people. For working to unravel the fabric of our society. Are you mad yet? Take a look around at all these people in elected positions who have actively taken advantage of those positions to enrich themselves, to enrich their families, regardless of the cost to you and I. They thrive on chaos, on ruin, on hatred, on violence, on perversion, on corruption, on evil. It is their lifeblood. It's almost as potent as adrenochrome to them. They love our misery. They love inflicting misery upon us.
We are a nation in decline. We are a failing nation. We are a nation that has the highest inflation in over 40 years, where the stock market just finished the worst first half of a year in more than five decades. We are a nation that has the highest energy costs in its history, and we are no longer energy independent or energy dominant, which we were just two short years ago. We are a nation that is begging Venezuela and Saudi Arabia for oil. We are a nation that surrendered in Afghanistan, leaving behind dead soldiers, American citizens, and $85 billion worth of the finest military equipment in the world. We are a nation that allowed Russia to devastate a country, Ukraine, killing hundreds of thousands of people, and it will only get worse. We are a nation that has weaponized its law enforcement against the opposing political party like never before. We've never seen anything like this. We are a nation that no longer has a free and fair press. Fake news is about all you get. We are a nation where free speech is no longer allowed, where crime is rampant like never before, where the economy has been collapsing, where more people died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. We are a nation that is allowing Iran to build a massive nuclear weapon and China to use the trillions and trillions of dollars it's taken from the United States to build a military to rival our own. We are a nation that over the past 2 years is no longer respected or listened to all around the world. And we are a nation that is hostile to liberty and freedom and faith. We are a nation whose economy is floundering, whose stores are not stocked, whose deliveries are not coming, and whose educational system is ranked at the bottom of every list. We are a nation that in many ways has become a joke. But soon we will have greatness again. It was hardworking patriots like you who built this country, and it is hardworking patriots like you who are going to save our country. There is no mountain we cannot climb. There is no summit we cannot reach. There is no challenge we cannot meet. There is no victory we cannot have. We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield ever, ever, ever. We will never give in. We will never give up. And we will never, ever back down. We will never let you down as long as we are confident and united. The tyrants we are fighting do not stand even a little chance. Because we are Americans, and Americans kneel to God and God alone. And it is time to start talking about greatness for our country again.
Well, how about it? It's time to get pissed off. And it's time to start being vocal about it. I'm not kidding. It's time to push. You know who these people are, and it's time to speak out against them. We don't have to look far to find out who they are. We don't. They're easily identifiable. They act as though they are invincible or immune to attack. They aren't. strength, vigilance, resolve. Those are the watchwords. Accountability. Retribution. That's what we're looking for. Maybe they don't get convicted in a court of law because the judge is one of their golfing buddies. Or maybe it's just because they're fellow travelers. That doesn't mean that they are above punishment. And while I'm not talking about vigilantism, these people can be silenced. But it's going to be up to us to do it. And how do we do that? Well, we take the pulpit away from them. We push them out of the bully pulpit. We take the microphone away from them. And there are more of us than there are of them. They have the microphone, so it sounds loud, like they have more. They don't. You want to talk about people running and screaming like little sissies when we stand up, when we have had enough? You want to talk about little weasels saying, oh, man, I was rooting for you guys all the time. I was just working with them to try and get information for you guys, kind of like a spy. Yeah, I've always been on your side. No. No. They're cowards. They're weasels. They're villains. Evil people with evil intent. In 1971, Gordon Scott, a broadcaster from Canada, read an editorial on the radio called The Americans. And that's what we're going to close up with tonight. ACP's heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio here at Patriot Nation Radio. So all you do, you go to blogtalkradio.com. Type in Patriot Nation Radio, you're going to find outstanding programming. You're going to find a conservative perspective. You're going to find the American Allegiance program with my friend Kevin White. You're going to find Liberty Lighthouse with Pete Serafin. You're going to find Aaron Barker and his program. You're going to find El Guapo, the handsome one, with Patriot Nation Radio Live on Thursdays. And you can find him out there on all the platforms because he's a super-duper star, Gary Benford, and United Patriots Uprising.
United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the world. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Well, who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did, that's who. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy, were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up. And their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. And I was there. I saw that. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it's the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. And now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. Now, I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplane. Come on now, you, let's hear it. Does any country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or a woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you find men on the moon not once but several times and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They're right here on our streets in Toronto. Most of them, unless they're breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend up here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said to hell with the rest of the world? Let somebody else buy the bonds. Let somebody else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France and Germany and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both of them are still broke. I can name to you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name to me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I'm one Canadian who is damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high, and when they do, they're entitled to thumb their noses at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these. But there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans this morning that it was broke. This year's disaster, with the year less than half over, has taken it all, and nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Do you know who these Americans are that he's talking about? These mythical people, these legendary people, these demigods almost. These superior exemplars of humanity and compassion. Do you know who he's talking about? He's not talking about Bill Clinton. He's not talking about Dianne Feinstein. He's not talking about Paul Ryan. He's not talking about Barbara Boxer. He's not talking about Nancy Pelosi. He's not talking about Chuck Schumer. He's not talking about Joe Biden. He's not talking about Mitch McConnell. He's not talking about those. He's talking about you and I. He's talking about us. And those people just like us from when he recorded this 50-some years ago in 1971. And it's just like that clip I play you from the movie Network, that Mad as Hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. Are things any different today than they were then? No. No. But the people who tried to keep it all together, the people who gave all, the people who put 110% into their commitment when they take on a job. He's talking about us. He's talking about our parents, our grandparents. The stand-up Joes, the good guys. And that's what we are, okay? I really don't like putting things, and that's one of the things that's led us to where we're at. We got a little bit of time. I was going to shut down at 8:30, but apparently not. It's us. It's our parents. It's our grandparents. We were the guys. We were the stand-up guys. We're the ones who want to make sure that everything's fair. We're the guys that help the opponent up off the field by putting out a hand. Not Nancy Pelosi. Not Paul Ryan. Not Bill de Blasio, not Nipples Cuomo, not McGarrell, much talking like a McGarrell. No, it's not those guys. He's talking about us. Us, we're the ones. Okay? We were the people that were working at McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and Grumman Aviation to build the components and to produce the technology needed to put a man on the moon. To build the jumbo jet, to build the Dreamliner, to build the Twin Towers, the Hoover Dam. It was us. Not the government, not elected leaders, you and I. And I'm going to tell you again, if you are looking for the cavalry, in that cloud of dust just over the horizon, where you hear off in the distance hoofbeats, they're not coming. If anything, it's the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And they are not on our side. We're going to have to be the cavalry. We're going to have to be the Normandy invasion force. What's happening right now culturally in this country, politically, this is our Guadalcanal. This is our Solomon Islands. This is our Iwo Jima. And if we can't save liberty here, if we can't preserve freedom here, just like Ronald Reagan said, there's nowhere else to go. The United States of America is the last best hope of freedom and liberty that the world has. We're going to have to be our cavalry. We're going to have to be our own Errol Flynn swinging on the vine, kicking the sword out of the Sheriff of Nottingham's hand. It's going to have to be us. Nobody's going to come do it for us. And there's no shortage of things that need to be done. And the first thing we start with is what? To speak out. It's time to stop being the nice guy, okay? It's time to be what happens when they F around and find out. We need to be what they discover at that point. And it's time to back them up. It's gone on way too long. And we've been way too patient and way too forbearing because we can't conceive of a dirty FBI. We can't conceive of government agencies targeting American citizens, labeling them as terrorists or extremists. We don't want to believe that. We don't want to think about 87,000 IRS agents armed to the teeth. We don't want to see those things. We don't want to think about them. We don't want to accept them. It is an anathema to us. Because up until about 35, 45 years ago, by and large, these things weren't existing. Although there were people who were motivated to try and bring about events that we see today, they didn't. They couldn't. You know why? Because we were paying attention and we didn't let them. When the American Nazi Party would try and hold rallies in the northern states, in the New England states, because they were pretty prominent up there, New York especially, but other places as well. Longshoremen and Teamsters went in there and kicked their asses. They wrecked the place. They busted heads. They broke chairs over people, and they run those Nazi bastards out of town. I'm not advocating violence. I'm not a violent person myself. But I've got to admit, there are times I see Nancy Pelosi on TV. I see Chuck Schumer on TV. I see that bald-headed SOB James Carville calling Trump people evil, racists. I would see that little George Costanza looking Brian Stelter, Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, all these America-hating people who have profited and become rich beyond avarice because of this country and the opportunities that it affords that they were able to take advantage of. And I'm like I said, I'm not a violent guy. I am not a violent guy. Really not. I'm a teddy bear. But I watch these people and I hear what they say. And I watch the Black Lives Matter demonstrators. I watch the Antifa demonstrators. And this teddy bear wants to turn into a 6'2", 270-pound silver-tipped grizzly. And I want to show those people the meaning of fear. I want to show those people the meaning of fury, of justice. Cold, hard, unrelenting, unstoppable, inescapable. And I'm just a regular guy. I am just Joe Average. I know I am not alone. And what worries me is there are people that probably feel even more animated about it. Glenn Beck's talked about it. You know, I used to think that he was kind of like overplaying it, but maybe now I'm not so sure. And other people have talked about it. You know, we're reaching this point of critical mass due to the hatred and division that Joe Biden has fomented and cultivated. It's the same hatred and division that Barack Obama and his cronies and people in government did. The same thing that Bill Clinton did. It's cancerous. And soon it'll be fatal. There won't be any cure. There won't be any resorts to fall back to. There may not be any more second chances or another chance to correct this. I don't care how spiritual you are or may not be. Just think about praying for this country. Think about praying for each other. Think about praying for wisdom from our political leaders. Just like in that time before the revolution, when Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, and he talked about the sunshine patriot. the Fairweather Soldier. The guys who weren't there that winter at Valley Forge. The guys who didn't the Delaware that December. The guys that weren't at Peleliu. The guys that weren't at Tarawa. The guys that weren't in the Hurtgen Forest. The guys that weren't at the Somme. The guys that weren't at Gettysburg. They're going to make noise, and they're going to stand on the sidelines, and that's about all they're going to do, and I guess that's okay. They've got to live with themselves. I don't. Be ready, people. Don't take my word for any of this. Go check it out yourselves. Go look these things up. Find out for yourself. And then prepare yourself. Train yourself accordingly. Figure out where it is that you think you can be the most effective in stopping this cancer, in excising this left-wing Marxist communist sickness from our body politic, from our culture, from our society, from our schools, from our libraries, from our county commissions, from our boards of education. Because the only people that can do it are us. George Custer and John Wayne are dead. We can't count on them. We can only count on each other. I think we're going to go ahead and knock off. That's about all the time we've got this evening. I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to come in and to talk about these things. They're serious issues. And, you know, I know it's tough because there are so many serious things going on, and the world right now is just such a massive downer on so many levels. And I'm not helping, okay? I'm not bringing good news, and I know that. And for that, I'm sincerely sorry. But it's news that we got to talk about. These things that are happening are things that will affect us, our children, our children's children. I'm not being overly dramatic. I cannot empathize it enough. And it's up to us, not them, not our children, not our children's children. It's up to us to put it shoulder to shoulder, make a stand, stem of this, and then go about the work of pushing it back. Once again, thank you very much for the opportunity to hang out with you guys tonight. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Patriot Nation, and a recorded version of the program Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern on Mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be. And if you can't listen, find a way. You guys take good care of yourselves. And I really, really mean that. Check on your neighbors. There's got to be some old people living in the neighborhood. Trim the grass, man. Go check on them. Take them a cake or pudding. Maybe they don't have any teeth. Look after them. Look around and make sure your kids are safe in the neighborhood. You can still wave to the guy that has a Biden bumper sticker, okay? Chances are, if he's like you, you know, he was just on the other side and he got sucked in and he's probably tore that damn thing off. Just say hello. Well, that's all we're going to do tonight. We'll be back on Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 to 8, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. Tomorrow night on deck, the American Allegiance program with Kevin White, 7 p.m. You don't want to miss that. And then back on Thursday, myself with ACP and Mark Hoffman with Patriot Nation Radio Live. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. You all take good care of each other.